It's episode number 489. It's a Tour de France rest day roundup. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back to episode number 489. I hope everybody had an absolutely fantastic, amazing weekend and got out for a little bit of riding. Got out a good weekend on the bike myself, got out yesterday on the gravel bike for the bones of 4 hours, was punctuated by me going over the bars. The thing with gravel, I'm always trying to find that limit between where I can walk, where you should definitely get off and walk, and where you should definitely ride. And I'm trying to find that little sweet spot and push the boundaries a little bit, and occasionally I do end up coming a crop and coming asunder, and I fell over yesterday in a little bit of a rock garden. Wasn't too bad, bumped the knee, nothing to really get too concerned about. We are into the 109th edition of the Tour de France. It is the world's greatest race, and it's kicking off in Copenhagen this year. Before I dive into all the action and unpack the first three stages in Denmark, which have been built up huge, drama in places, excitement in places, controversy in places, but also, if we're going to be completely honest, a little bit boring in other parts as well. I'm going to unpack all that in a moment, but first I want to give a massive welcome to any new listeners who are coming across from Cyclist Magazine podcast. If anyone hasn't been a regular listener to this podcast, you will know I announced a little bit back that I'm also now co-hosting the Cyclist Magazine podcast in addition to the Roadman Cycling podcast. Roadman Cycling is always going to be my baby, but I am popping in. It's a quite irregular podcast. It's only once every 2 weeks, so I pop in every second Thursday to host the Cyclist Magazine podcast. Had the first episode out last week with Corey Williams, but as a result, I know we've got a lot of Cyclist Magazine podcast listeners coming back into the Roadman Cycling world, so a very massive welcome to you, and a massive welcome today to any of our US listeners, and happy 4th of July, happy Independence Day over there. The Tour de France this year is a little bit special because if you are a Netflix subscriber, you probably will have following the idea that Netflix have come along with a recording crew and they're recording parts of the Tour de France this year. Well, they're recording all the Tour de France, but they're getting limited access from some of the teams. So we've teams like, teams like it, as you'd expect, probably the teams that have general classification to think about. They have UAE, Jumbo Visma. They haven't given access to Netflix documentary Drive to Survive, similar to the Formula One one. But I watched a Formula One documentary, and they also had limited access in the first couple of seasons for that. I think Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton weren't involved in the first season. So you would think and you would hope that as the season goes into season two, season three. They will get access to this and they will start to see the wort from shows like this, because there's a lot of value add for sponsors, and we're struggling in this industry. Cycling sponsorship at times is like philanthropy. We're struggling to figure out innovative ways to give return on investment to sponsors, and that is definitely one of the ways you can do it. So I really support that. I hope it goes well, and I'm definitely going to be tuning in for it. Copenhagen has been absolutely insane. The fans out in Copenhagen were unreal. We were treated to a Tour de France time trial, a little bit longer than the prologue, in 13 kilometers for the opening stage. We had Wout van Aert, and he'd already beat Pogacar, and he was sitting down in his hot seat, and it looked for all the world like Wout van Aert was going to be the winner of stage one and take the first maillot jaune of the 2022 Tour de France, when Yves Lampaert, he rocked through the course and he beat Wout van Aert, I think by about 5 seconds in the end. If you haven't seen it, the Belgian for Quickstep rider, he's absolutely brilliant entertainment in the interview after. He's like, "I don't believe this. I'm the farmer's son from Belgium. I say to myself, Yves, thrust your tires, go full in the corners." It's brilliant. That was the worst Belgian impression ever, but it's brilliant. Go back and watch Yves Lampaert's interview when he took the stage win on stage one. Really interesting. Bessinger from EF Education was really hyped, built up so big before. It was like there was a coordinated media release went out to everyone on that everyone that had a social media account on Twitter, every gimp that doesn't even watch or listen to Cycling was tweeting about how Bissinger is going to win the stage. I just didn't see where it was coming from. Apparently he's been in the wind tunnel and simulating this stage. I didn't see it. And easy to say, I told you so in retrospect, but the lad hit the deck twice and he wasn't near the running. He was like Bambi on ice in the end. We did get, as we expected to get, we got a straight out showdown between Wout van Aert, Mathieu van der Poel, Filippo Ganna, who punctured but still managed to bring it home, I think in fifth place. But it was the Yves Lampaert show. The next two stages were highly hyped, especially stage two, because we were going across Europe's largest bridge. And Patrick Lefebvre at a Quick Step Boss, he's been absolutely hammered from every angle, from every podcaster, from every cycling show and media outlet for not bringing Mark Cavendish to the tour. For context, Mark Cavendish is tied on overall stage wins in the Tour de France with the GOAT, the greatest of all time, Eddie Merckx. Now, the conspiracy theory goes like, Patrick Lefebvre is the manager of Cavendish's team now. He's Belgium. Eddie Merckx is Belgium. Cavendish's team Quickstep is Belgium. All their sponsors is Belgium. And Cavendish was omitted from the tour squad despite having more World Tour points than Jakobsen in the run-up to it, despite being the UK champion, having won it last week in a break from Alex Richardson, who had on the podcast that week. And it just looked very difficult to make sense of. But then Patrick Lefebvre, as he always does, you know, he let go of Bennett. He just seems to know when to let go of stuff. He let go of Bennett when it looked like he was the form sprinter in the world, and he hasn't been able to recapture that Quick-Step form since. He's done this time and time again, and he decided not to bring Cavendish. And what happens? Yves Lampaert wins stage one, Quick-Step, pressure off immediately. Now they have the yellow jersey. They go into stage two. Fabio Jakobsen, brilliant lead out from Michael Morkov, the best in the game at the moment. Jakobsen wins stage two. Jakobsen was on his deathbed after a Toric Polonia crash just over 2 years ago, and he wins stage two. It's comeback complete. That crash has got an awful lot of attention, and it's something I've spoke about on the podcast before, and I don't like the idea that we punish consequences, not conduct. That was a horrible crash. The consequences of it were absolutely shocking. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it was a horrific downhill sprint finish in Tour de Poland 2 years ago. Fabio Jakobsen tries to go on the barriers past Dylan Groenewegen. Dylan Groenewegen closes the door. Jakobsen and Groenewegen go down. Jakobsen comes off really, really bad. He's in an induced coma. He loses teeth. It's terrible. At one point, he looks like he might die. Then we watch to see if he's going to make, you know, full brain recovery again and just be a functioning human again. Then we watch to see, will he ever be able to walk again? Will he be ever able to ride a bike again? Will he ever race a bike again? Will he ever race professionally again? Will he ever race in the World Tour again? Will he ever get selected for the Tour de France? Will he ever win a Tour de France stage? So it is comeback complete for Fabio Jakobsen. But that crash has been in the media attention and sort of, communal parlance all week, because Dylan Groenewegen has gone and won the following stage. So it's the two talking points of that Tour of Polonia crash are in the media again for winning stages two and stages three. But what we're seeing every single sprint stage so far is Sagan leaning on Reuters. And this isn't outlawed. You're allowed lean on Reuters. Sagan's leaning on Wout van Aert in the stage three sprint. He's leaning on, I think it was Michael Morkov in the stage two sprint. But yet Dylan Groenewegen got a 9-month suspension for his Tour de Polonia crash. He got hate mail. He got death threats. He lost his contract with Jumbo-Visma. And he continues to endure that sort of mental legacy of that crash to this day. I just don't agree with it at all. I don't agree that what Sagan does is any different from what Dylan Groenewegen done. Contact at that speed has consequences. Sometimes they don't come down, like today, like yesterday. People didn't come down. But Caleb could have come down today. Sagan contacted with him. If Caleb doesn't hit the brakes, he goes down. Jakobsen didn't hit the brakes that day when Dylan Groenewegen contacted him, and he went down. So I don't know. The rules on this seem fuzzy at the moment. I don't see how Sagan gets no penalty, and Dylan Groenewegen basically gets the death sentence in Tour de Polonia a couple of years ago. it's a strange one for me at the moment. Wout van Aert has been second on every single stage we've had so far. We've only had three stages, obviously. We've had the TT and the two sprint stages. The first one won by Jakobsen and the second one won by Dylan Groenewegen. But Wout van Aert has been second on all of those. He is the Maillot Jaune at the moment. Interestingly, there has been a few GC victims already. Rigoberto Urán done his very best to not lose time on the stage over the bridge, which was stage two. He got caught behind a crash. At one point, he was a minute and 22 seconds back. The commissar, who's obviously never raced a bike in his life, decided to pull the cavalcade out. So if you're in a crash, we have these rules in cycling, and then we have the unwritten rules in cycling. If you're in a crash or you have a mechanical, it's a blind eye is normally turned to you using a little bit of assistance to get back and restore yourself to the position you were in before that misfortune. It's not cheating. It's just one of those unwritten rules in cycling. But the commissar is ultimately the adjudicator and officiator on those rules and how we apply those rules. It's frustrating as a fan when those rules aren't applied evenly. Yves Lampaert goes down. He seems to get some assistance coming back to the bunch from the cavalcade, and that's fine. Rigoberto Urán goes down, he's into the back of the cavalcade, and the commissar makes the decision to pull out the cavalcade and say, no, it's not cool, you can't ride in that cavalcade. He ultimately made it back, he sent back Bissinger, and the EF boys done a great, great job to limit his loss to zero, so he lost no time on stage two. But how frustrated must they have been when none other than Rigoberto Urán loses 40 seconds today on basically a nutting stage for GC. You know, that's not taken away from the sprinters because it's their day. It's a nutting stage on GC. The only goal as a GC rider today is to get through without incident, and Rigoberto Urán loses 40 seconds again. Wasted energy yesterday, loses time today. This is not how you can carry on your business if you're a GC rider. I just don't see Rigoberto Urán having a notable GC challenge if this continues. Jack Haig, who was also top 10 last year, and did he crash out of top 10? I can't remember, but he's a definite contender for top 10 again this year. Lost 40 seconds again today for Bahrain Merida, and they've had their own problems because the police, I was going to say the Garda, we call the Irish police the Garda, the gendarmes are consistently raiding or providing information to foreign authorities to raid Bahrain Merida hotels and team buses. And interesting, Francis de Jour, Agile d'Auxerre haven't got raided yet. I wonder, is there a little bit of a hometown decision? Tomorrow, we are into a rest day, and then, well, it's more of a travel day than a rest day, which is hard for the riders because they're moving from Copenhagen across to Dunkirk for the start of stage four. So it's quite a decent bit of travel, but there's still tomorrow to get out on the bike, to do media, to do massages. So it's a busy day. And then we're going to go stage four, Dunkirk to Calais. If you were looking at the roadmap and most cycling news and stuff are saying this is transition stage, it's 171.5 kilometers. That part of France, I've raced there a lot, it's just not flat. It's up and down and it's up and down. It's all these short little kickers that are uncategorized. And there's one category four climb, 10 kilometers from the finish, which is a little bit of a launch pad. But interestingly for me, if you look at the map, the last 25 to 30 kilometers are all along the coast. You put in that undulating terrain and a coastal road with any sort of breeze, I just don't see this stage four being a bunch finish, and I don't see it being as easy a transition stage as the media are making out. I think we're going to see some bike racing there. And after the block headwind on stage two, which, you know, it was billed as going to be this massive battle in the crosswinds, ultimately it was a little boring because we got a block headwind and nothing really happened. The only bit of entertainment we had was, would Urán make it back to the, maybe the commissar was on some sort of commission from Eurosport and TV broadcasters, because that was the only bit of excitement we had. Would Rigoberto Urán make it back to the cavalcade? Oh no, they've pulled out the cavalcade. Will he make it back to the bunch? It was there wasn't much to cheer about. But stage four, we might see some drama, and everyone is going to have one eye on stage five, because stage five, if you listen back to my Tour de France podcast, if you haven't, what have you been doing with your life? Go back and listen to it. Stage five is where we hit the cobbles, and stage five is everyone is going to have an eye on this. Everyone's going to be nervous ahead of it. Everyone's going to be trying to conserve energy. So stage four, you would think, is this opportunity that maybe if you're a stage hunter, you can go and get something done. You know, maybe it's a Mathieu van der Poel type day where we try and see him snatch the jersey. Who knows? I am excited. The Tour de France, it's brilliant. It's just epic entertainment. And I absolutely cannot wait to see how the next 2.5 weeks unfold. Roadmen, thank you for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow again with another feature-length interview episode. I'm not going to spoil the surprise, but you're going to absolutely love this one. Until then, ride safe and chat tomorrow. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're getting value from the podcast, can I ask you for one small favor before you head about your day? Can you make a point of sharing episodes that you have enjoyed with friends who you think need to hear that message? Or better yet, if you get the episode link and share it into a club, Facebook or WhatsApp group, whatever your particular club is using. I truly believe that we're building something valuable and something special here on the Roadman Cycling Podcast, but I need your help. I need the help of every single Roadman Cycling Podcast listener to spread the word. It is much appreciated, Roadman.